What in nature makes that noise? Do we know? I assume nothing natural, but it's just, well. Anyway, that was Space Age Computer Music by Perry and Kingsley. So add that to your holiday list, and you'll be, you know, get it for somebody. They'll love you for it. Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel section, our panel segment this morning. It's really nice to have you on with us and get to share with us. We have a lot to talk about today. Let me introduce the group to you. A reminder, as always, you can, it's very simple, just write us a note. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. All right, let's go to our group this morning. It's a Moog synthesizer. That's what's made that noise. It's a Moog synthesizer, says Sarah LaDuc. And I appreciate that. Okay. So no woodland creatures were harmed in the making of that music. Alan Chartok, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm sitting here and I'm listening to the music and watching the few birds. And, you know, I took my walk and, you know, I made it back. It's all good.
Oh, I'm sorry. So it's Moog. It's Moog synthesizer, not Moog. It's Moog synthesizer.
Oh, Moog, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I screwed that up.
Okay, I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't like it.
Well, I don't know. We're all talking about it so positively. yeah, Moog. So it would be like moan, but with a G. Moog synthesizer. Did you know that, Mike?
Is the Sarah LaDuc rule that you can't say you don't like something that we've played?
I don't think it's a rule. I think sometimes she has a certain interest and ownership on the music, but I don't think it's a rule. No, I don't think we hurt her feelings.
Okay, so we can say what we want without being.
It's a norm.
Yeah. what did you say, Bob?
I said it's a norm.
Yeah. Well, so there's that. I find it fascinating. And I will tell you, I actually had this conversation just moments ago because later on in the program, we're going to have a guy who wrote a book about the golden age of animation. And the book is fantastic. And I can't wait to see the music that Sarah has picked for that segment. So there you go. Good morning, Alan. It's good. I'm glad you got all of those things accomplished. You got much more accomplished this early than most of us. And
I'm up at two, but by the time this comes around, it's almost bedtime.
That's true. Well, no. You know, hopefully you can make it till 11:50.
Bedtime is 7.
Alan is here. Chris Churchill is here. Times Union columnist. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good morning. I thought I had accidentally called into the Benny Hill show when I heard the music.
Yeah. Well, this is no Moog synthesizer with Benny Hill, but no, this is you're at the right place, Chris. You're here and you're ready to go.
All right, good.
The dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security at the University at Albany, Bob Griffin. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. And keeping with the music, today's show is brought to you by Color Jumpsuit Orange and the numbers 25 to life.
No pardon for you.
All right. Now what do we do? We're going to be talking a lot about pardons this morning. Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm sitting here writing Christmas cards out, and my house is now fully lit, sort of like the Griswolds. So I was hoping for Christmas music, but I like the synthesizer stuff.
Yeah,
it's kind of sporty.
It's upbeat and fun. The obvious joke here, and I'll make it before Bob does, but if go ahead, Bob. You can do it.
I was going to say you are visiting your neighbor if you're fully lit.
Yeah, there you go. That's the joke.
No, not this morning, but I must get up there.
Oh, great minds, Mr. Griffin. Okay. It is good morning, everyone. We're just a wee bit punchy today. It's good to have you all here. We'll go on with what is happening in the world and begin on an investigation that the Washington Post broke the story, and it is an interesting one at that. The Justice Department investigated potential bribery for pardon scheme involving the White House. The Justice Department in August investigated a potential bribery for pardon scheme in which a large political contribution would be offered in exchange for a presidential pardon by the White House, according to court records unsealed on Tuesday. The documents show that U.S. prosecutors were scrutinizing whether two individuals approached senior White House officials as unregistered lobbyists and a related scheme in which cash would be funneled through intermediaries for a pardon or reprieve of a sentence for a defendant apparently in Federal Bureau of Prisons custody at some point. The status of the investigation is unclear. The slender record is heavily redacted and does not identify the investigation's targets or whether anyone has been or will be charged. It also does not indicate what senior White House officials did after allegedly being approached. No government official was or is currently a subject or target of the investigation disclosed in the filing, said a Justice Department official, speaking on the condition of anonymity. The records were unsealed by Chief Judge Beryl Howell of the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, who released an August 28th opinion describing the government's theory. The opinion granted prosecutors' request to access search warrant evidence, including confidential emails sent among at least three individuals and their agents that could have been protected by attorney-client privilege. The White House had no comment. Alan, let's begin with you.
Well, I don't have much to add to this, but however, I got to say that the first thing that sprung to my mind, and I'm sure most WAMC listeners, is that there is a current war going on between the president. It's subliminal, but it's there, between the president and Mr. Barr at Justice. Now, I'm surprised that that Barr hasn't been dismissed forthwith by the firing president. However, this does play very interestingly into it. If you think about it for a minute, now out comes this piece of information. Chief Judge Washington lets it out. But it's interesting that here's Barr feuding with the president, and out comes the idea that maybe they're actually selling pardons down there in the White House. Fascinating, isn't it?
It is indeed. Rosemary, what do you make of it?
Okay, so I'm having a little trouble making anything of it. You read the story aloud, and so I think all our listeners saw how convoluted it is.
Yes.
This started in August. What's the status of it now? Who's involved? It's all very, it sounds really bad. And of course, because I'm a never Trumper, I want it to be that he's doing nasty things that he can get in trouble for, but who knows? And Barr appointed yesterday a special counsel to continue going after the Russia investigation, not this, not the pardons. So I'm not ready to absolve Barr of his bad doings either. I think this is a lot of smoke right now, and I'd like to dig down and get to the fire. I'm sure it's coming, but I don't know quite what to make of it right now.
So let me ask you, as an editor, would you have published the story with the scant information that is available?
Yes. Yes, I would have made it more clear than that story, which you read and this one I read also. I tried to look for some other things, but I would have made it much more clear that what we don't know. That's one of the things you do as an investigative reporter, say, this is what we do know, this is what we don't know. And there's nothing in that story that says, this is what it could mean. This is what we don't know, and there's no way of understanding this. Why did the judge let it out? This came from a federal judge.
Right.
They let out stuff when they want the people to know about it. So for that reason alone, as an editor, I would have gone with it. But it's clear as mud.
Do you agree with that, Chris?
Yeah, I think I do. I mean, I do wish the story had more information. And it's always true when you write or when you report stories about an FBI investigation that an investigation doesn't necessarily mean anything, right? I mean, you can investigate.
Right.
The FBI investigates lots of things that we never know about. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, nothing comes of the investigation because they find that there's nothing there. And that may very well be the case here, right? I mean, but that said, we'd be naive to think that campaign contributions haven't been factors in pardons previously under previous presidents. We all remember Mark Rich, or a lot of people remember Mark mm-hmm. Rich in the late 19, pardoned by Bill Clinton. He was a major campaign contributor. It's not like it's unheard of.
Do we remember?
Although it may not be quite as direct as this would have been if it's true.
Well, the thing we all remember
Mark Rich, of course, or many of us do. But do you remember the other 9 people who got pardons at the same time? Rich people in some cases.
Well, what kind of people?
Rich people, R-I-C-H, rich people.
Yeah.
I would like to point out that one of the pardons that Trump gave was to Ron Blagojevich from the governor of Illinois.
Oh, Rob Blagojevich, yeah, the governor.
Rob Blagojevich. Yeah. Sorry, I shouldn't know that.
That's all right.
He's Serbian descent. And what was he doing? He was selling offices. So it's not as if Trump is opposed to this kind of behavior.
Well, that was what the game for me, Bob, was to try to figure out who was in jail at the time in August, right?
I was doing the same thing, trying to figure out who was alive in jail in August.
Yeah.
And I actually, have the document from the courts in front of me. Unfortunately, it's a 17-page document, of which it looks like it's bleeding black ink. I mean, pages 3 from 12 are actually completely wiped out, so not a single word was allowed, which makes it even a little more tantalizing. And not only was I playing the game of who could it potentially be, I find it really interesting, and there may not be any relationship between these two issues, but until I know for sure, I'm not guaranteeing that. We have a lot of talk right now about pardons. Hannity is coming
right
out with a statement about the family,
right,
and the president should pardon himself, and all of a sudden Giuliani's in this mix, in the children are in the mix, and this document comes out, I've been watching this administration, and they usually try to get ahead of bad news, try to throw up other sort of obstacles, and I think there may be a relationship here.
Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, what in the world would Giuliani need a pardon for? But Giuliani seems to be at the top of the president's list right now, including his kids. So one wonders what exactly Giuliani is scared of that he's insisting on this.
Mm.
Yeah, and the trial balloon from Hannity made a lot more sense to me after seeing this story break. I don't for a minute feel that these aren't related. I do think that there's interconnectivity. A couple of issues that I would toss and I'm interested to hear some of the other panel's perceptions. I mean, this gets back to a situation we've talked about on the roundtable several times about the whole need for campaign finance reform, and the damage that's been done to the electoral system because of the Supreme Court cases and the flow of money, you said it at the beginning that you're not surprised that there's, I think Alan, you said it, you're not surprised that there's a link potentially between donations and pardons. There's, I think, so many links between donations and policy right now that it's unfair to the rest of us.
The interesting thing, I guess, I understand what you're saying about that this could be preemptive in some way, but then the judge would have to be in on it, right?
No, not at all. The judge was pushing, I would argue, the judge was pushing Justice to release, and actually, as I read the article, had sent back asking a line-for-line explanation of why everything was redacted so that the Justice Department knew it was coming out. So that's what I would have said was the flag for Hannity and others.
I see.
So this didn't come out. This didn't come as a surprise to the Justice Department at all.
But meaning,
that's interesting.
But meaning then that this would not necessarily have to do with the pardons that we will talk about in a few moments, but the pardons that are possible for Giuliani, the family, Trump himself.
It could be. That's what I'm saying is that, you know, I wonder if there is some sort of causal relationship, understanding that this was going to break no matter what they, you know, they obviously tried to bury it. The judge said no, that they were trying to get ahead of it. I mean, it's just speculation, Joe, but I mean, it's just you look at these weird coincidences and, you know, coming out so strongly about, you know, again, we're seeing the term witch hunt used again. I mean, we're seeing a lot of the language that we've seen, you know, in the Russia investigation and other investigations started to be brought back into the flow of conversation.
Rosemary?
I like this. I think that makes more sense than I've been able to put together. And the speculation about who it is. What have you heard? Our crack WAMC control guys are floating the name of Rick Gates, because apparently there's an apostrophe as if that had not been redacted. So it's someone's last name ends in S. I keep thinking of Lev and Igor. Remember those guys? They were in federal custody too, and they were connected to Giuliani. So I find that all interesting. But I love your theory that this was an effort by the judge to get more of the redactions erased. And so that was an alert to Bill Barr, because I really don't think he's trying to go after Trump, not at all.
I'll take it a step further. I think the announcement coming out that he appointed the special prosecutor to continue the investigation to discredit the Russian connection to the 2016 election, I sort of view that as a bone that he was throwing to try to
balance, right?
Yes.
I want to remind everybody, if I may, about a former Giuliani comment about
one minute, by the way, but go ahead.
Yeah, very quickly, about Trump wouldn't dare with what he knows, what he, Giuliani, knows. So I'm not surprised to see Giuliani at the head of the list. I'm also not pulling back on my idea that it's also very interesting that this is happening right now. With Trump and Barr at each other's throats. So I think it's a signal from Barr. You better watch it.
Fascinating stuff.
It's hard to know.
Go ahead, Alan.
What Barr is doing. You know that he may be trying to redeem his resume now that he's going to be out. Who knows? But there's no way that he's changed colors and suddenly is a champion of justice against Trump.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We welcome your letters. We'll get to those and much, much more conversation with our terrific panel after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo. So this in other pardon news. In the New York Times, they write, Trump has discussed with advisors pardons for his three eldest children and Rudolph Giuliani. Giuliani, who is promoting baseless claims of widespread election fraud, talked about a pardon with the president as recently as last week. The president has discussed with advisors whether to grant these preemptive pardons to his children, to his son-in-law, and to his personal lawyer. Mr. Trump has told others that he is concerned that a Biden Justice Department might seek retribution against the president by targeting the oldest three of his five children, Donald Trump Jr., Eric Trump, and Ivanka Trump, as well as Ms. Trump's husband, Jared Kushner, a White House senior advisor. Donald Trump Jr. had been under investigation by Robert Mueller, the special counsel, for contacts that the younger Mr. Trump had with Russians, offering damaging information on Hillary Clinton during the 2016 campaign, but he was never charged. Mr. Kushner provided false information to federal authorities about his contacts with foreigners for his security clearance, but was given one anyway by the president. The nature of Mr. Trump's concern about any potential criminal exposure of Eric Trump or Ivanka Trump is unclear, although an investigation by the Manhattan District Attorney into the Trump Organization has expanded to include tax write-offs on millions of dollars in consulting fees by the company, some of which appear to have gone to Ivanka Trump. Okay, so that from the New York Times. Oh, what a tangled web we weave. Yes. My question to you, though, is there anyone on this panel or listening to us in the sounds of our voices right now who didn't talk about this and see this coming like 3.5 years ago?
Absolutely, but isn't the timing really interesting? The week of Thanksgiving when, you know, you could see the conversation, right? Donald's, do you pardon the two turkeys or Rudy and Jared?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, like...
Which one's which? Yeah.
I thought it was more like, Dad, can I have a pardon, by the way, pass the salt?
Yeah, this is really interesting.
Earlier, Alan asked... Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, Chris, go. You jump in. I've been just being snarky, so go ahead.
Which we don't want to.
Well, earlier
knock
Alan
down.
Asked.
Go ahead, yeah, Chris.
Alan asked if anybody remembered the other people who Bill Clinton pardoned on his last day of in office, and it was actually, I'm looking at the list. It was 140 people pardoned on the last day, and there's some interesting names on the list, including Roger Clinton, the president's brother. But what's notable is that all of these people had actually been accused or charged with crimes or convicted of crimes. What's remarkable about the Trump pardons is that, or, you know, these potential pardons, is that these people haven't been really formally accused of anything yet. It's just this kind of blanket get out of, you know.
Jail free card.
For use of a, yeah, jail yeah. free card. And it's strange. It's really strange. I mean, what are they expecting is going to happen? I don't think it's likely that Biden is going to go on this, you know, big retribution spree and try to arrest all the Trumps. That just doesn't seem like Biden's style, and he's indicated that he doesn't really have much interest in prosecuting, you know, Trump administration officials. So what exactly are they expecting?
You know, Chris, to pick up that thread, you know, don't you have to admit guilt in order to be pardoned?
No.
No, if you're being pardoned, isn't
I mean, you're saying if you ask for a pardon, you are saying I've done something wrong that could possibly get me in trouble.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, that's how I know.
No, they're saying, they're saying you Democrats are going to go after us for no reason, just like you did our dear father. And so we need protection against the angry horde.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying. They're not admitting any guilt at all.
Well, but let me, you know, one of the articles I read that I thought was really interesting is it said that in order for this to hold up, though, that they're going to have to be more specific about what the pardon is for. That's what I thought was really interesting is that this idea of just this blanket, you know, go forth and do whatever you want to do. You're totally forgiven. It wasn't going to hold up, that they had to be more specific about it. And then going back to the example that you just talked about with the Clinton pardons, they were specific about what the pardons were for.
The Clinton pardons were all requested and they went through the Justice Department. The real model here is Ford's pardon of Nixon. For crimes that were not, he was not indicted for. Yeah. He did not admit. He said, yes, I did the following, therefore forgive me, I am guilty of Watergate. He never said that. We waited years to hear it, and it never happened. And that's what he's doing now. So what you're saying, where they'd have to admit guilt or specify, one side could argue that, but it would go into court, and it would be very debatable who would prevail.
So when do you bring it out, though? I mean, is it a pardon for... how do I put this nicely? But it's not just one thing that they could possibly be charged for. There are many things by many different fronts, of whether it be in New York State, whether it be federal, who knows? So does that pardon, is that a blanket pardon for anything?
No, it can't be. You can't, a federal pardon can't attach to something that happened in New York State. Right, we all know that.
Right, state and local aren't covered
right.
under the federal.
Okay,
pardon.
But anything federal, no matter by who or what, would be then pardoned.
Well, Rosemary's absolutely right. It's the Nixon pardons that you look at, not all these other pardons. Nixon was pardoned without any explanation of what he was being pardoned for, really.
I mean, it is true that you can't pardon for behavior from now until the end of time. It's not like everything Ivanka and Jared do for the next 50 years, they have a get-out-of-jail pass. But certain things connected to their service to the president over the past 4 years, and that's a lot of dirt from what we know, that would, at the federal level, they could not face charges for. And I think it's worse. I mean, I think we're going to see Ghislaine Maxwell get pardoned. I think that there's lots of white-collar criminals who are out there who are going to get pardons. It's going to be a pardon fest.
A pardon fest. And now it begins.
Don't you think there's some limit? Don't you think there's some limit on what they can do? I mean,
nope.
Yeah, okay, well, you may be right. Maybe there's a list of 120 pardons or 250 pardons, but I think they got to be careful here so that they'll give it to
So the Nixon pardon was written as an absolute pardon for all offenses against the United States, which he has committed or may have committed. So that's pretty broad. I mean, if they issued something similar to that, that would cover just about everything. It would cover every federal offense. It wouldn't protect them from state and state prosecutions, obviously.
And then
that's absolutely right.
That wouldn't
the pardon is the Constitution gives such huge power to the president to pardon. And of course, the founding fathers saw it as an act of mercy to undo any excess by the judicial system. And Trump, as is his wont, has taken the tradition and turned it on its head and is using it to whole scale forgive people who are his cronies and his enablers.
Bob, could it backfire at all?
Absolutely. I mean, you're completely correct about the federal pardons don't apply to civil, state, or local offenses. I can envision almost the O.J. Simpson situation where where justice was derived through civil process rather than criminal. I think it sets an incredibly poor precedent for the country. The president was never supposed to be a king. I mean, even if you start to think about monarchies, the current monarchies don't have the ability to absolve them, their families and their children of crimes against the Commonwealth. This is a really ugly precedent. With that said, though, Trump isn't the only president who's pardoned. And doing just a quick look at the history, actually, if you look at the numbers, like FDR and Truman had 2,000 pardons each. So I mean, there is a broad use of the pardon process, but to the best of my knowledge, really is directly tied to the president himself, other than the Nixon case.
But nobody has yet said anything about the Supreme Court, right? Some of this is going to the Supreme Court.
Yep. Even before the Supreme Court, Alan, it'll go to a judiciary system that is now filled with Trump appointees who believe, if not in the actual king power of the president, in a lot of executive power and discretion. You're hearing that from the Supreme Court, even in regards to the census and to electoral process. He doesn't have to have king power. He's just right below that. And this is close enough to Nixon that at the very least, you're talking about years of legal wrangling over a pardon, these pardons.
And the power to pardon yourself. That's going to be,
right.
That could well go to this court. And
Nixon didn't pardon himself. No, Ford did. And notwithstanding the makeup of the court,
right.
I actually think this is exactly the type of case that should go to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
You know, that this is such a fundamental question of balance of governmental authority that it does require the clarification of the Supreme Court.
But that would assume an honest Supreme Court.
Mm.
That's the problem with this one. In other words, It may well be that the Supreme Court is going to have to make a number of rulings, and an easy one for them to say thank you to the president for favors rendered would be to let him pardon himself. So, yeah, in other words, it isn't just that there's this honest broker called the Supreme Court right there. There's politics there, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But remember, it sets the precedent. And what's good for Trump will be good for Biden or whoever comes after them. I mean, this is the, you know, I know we're thinking specifically about Trump and what he's done and what he's done with the court. But this sets legal precedents that that will stand for a long time.
All right, let's go to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue. We have a lot of letters from many, many listeners, so we'll get to those when we come back. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo making up the group this morning. We'll be right back. Well, I just found out I passed my hearing test. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Am I right? Left hand up. I can hear the sounds. Yeah. Panel at WAMC.org is how you reach us, and many people have. So let me get to these letters. Sophia writes, Trump can keep from doing illegal things until January 20th and then pardon them then. This is a go ahead, no consequences. All right. We then go to Kim. Isn't a preemptive unspecified pardon a license to kill?
From the very beginning, Trump and Fifth Avenue, remember
no,
that?
No, it's not. Yeah.
All right.
That would be charged. I mean.
Yeah, go ahead.
That would be a state charge. Murder isn't a federal charge.
No, murder can be a federal charge. I mean,
assuming she's talking about murder, that's not a federal charge.
Yes, actually, you're wrong. You guys are, I think, wrong. There are murder charges in the federal statutes. Yes, there are.
Yes. Yes. Right, but if, I mean, we're
like what?
Getting maybe a little off the path, but if Donald Trump Jr. went out and murdered somebody tomorrow, he would be charged by local officials. It wouldn't be a federal crime.
Depends on where it occurs.
Right.
I'm glad you're so sure of that.
White House, that's a
if
federal,
he assassinated the president, would that be a federal murder? What's a federal murder charge? Like a Capitol policeman or the president or something?
Well, it would be like a terrorist charge, right? That would be a...
Come on. There are all kinds of federal murder charges.
Yeah.
All right.
And just one correction from what I said earlier, because I do realize the error of my ways. Thank you to the Washington Post. that one point that you can exercise a pardon, but you can't. It only can be for what has already happened, not what could be in the future.
Yeah, I said that. That's
yeah.
Right.
No, you were absolutely spot on. I forgot about the Garland case.
All right, so that answers the listener's question.
The Gerald Ford pardon of Nixon had a time range. You know, it was basically covered his days in office.
Right.
All right, let's get back to letters here. Norman says, for some time...
By the way, there are...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was going to just tell you that there are 10 ways that murders can become a federal crime. So if they're killings that relate to drug trafficking, crossing state borders, if they occur on a body of water, or if they're considered an attack on the U.S. government or judicial system.
Thanks for the help.
Actually, yes, I looked it up because that's interesting. So he could. So Donnie Jr. could kill like a federal judge or an immediate family member of a law enforcement official.
Anyone's going to kill anybody.
He could be involved in a drug deal, and then he could be pardoned for that.
I love the wild hypothetical nature of this conversation. But Rosemary, even if they pardoned him for that, the local officials could still charge him for the same crime. It's not like you can only charge those crimes as federal crimes. They can also be charged locally, I believe.
I believe that would also end up in court because the pardon, if he got a pardon and you tried to charge him locally, isn't that double jeopardy? He got pardoned for the crime already. Yeah. You can't charge him.
But to your point, Rosemary, and to Bob's point, it would have to be something that has already been committed prior to
be cannot
the
do
pardon.
It in the future.
Okay. All right.
Right.
Just so that gets to the nature of the letter, which was a license to kill. Okay. That's how we got started on all this. I just want to bring it around.
I'm really sorry. We did go on the deep end, but you know, part of this is you have to learn things, and I like that.
I agree.
New things in this conversation, so thank you all.
Chris says, when you are going to start talking exclusively about Joe Biden and his exploits, when are you, is the question. Will you begin on January 21st? I am curious. You're setting yourselves up to continue talking about Trump far into the year to come. After all, the why do you Trump people keep bringing up Hillary you used back in the early days of the Trump administration?
Okay, I would like to say that we have been on the record forever saying that Hunter Biden actually is something that we should be looking at, that Trump did it in the wrong way. He used Hunter Biden's offenses to go after his father when there's no evidence directly linking the vice president. And it has been sought. The Wall Street Journal spent a ton of time trying to connect Joe Biden to things that Hunter did. The crimes of children, of nepotism has been a problem. Back to Clinton. You just brought up I'd forgotten about that, the pardon of Clinton's brother. And Carter had trouble with his brother. So absolutely, the press will look at that and is looking at that stuff already. The press goes after people in power. That's our job.
Okay. Let's see. We go to Chris. Oh, no. I just read Chris's letter. Jim, and it's our good friend Jim Henler. Consider if Trump pardons family. Vance goes after them in New York. What happens on Fox and right-wing media? Trump is pre-creating the rage of the right when this occurs. What are the chances the Trump loyalists will care about the legal niceties you are discussing?
None. And I think the letter writer is completely correct that this is setting the stage for more moral indignation, which gets back to the earlier letter about, you know, how long are we going to talk about Trump? I don't know. Probably until I die. I mean, it's been such a mess of an administration, and it has so shown how many flaws we have in our system that need to be fixed. That his time in office will reverberate through at least modern history,
through every history book, right? Without question.
That's a pretty depressing thought, Bob, the idea of you muttering about Trump on your deathbed.
Ukrainian call. Yes.
Law and order. Can you tell us who did it, Chris?
For some time, writes Norman, I've wondered if a sentimental Bureau of Prisons would give Jared Kushner the same cell as his father occupied. Now, it seems, we'll never know.
No, we do. There's still time in the future. He's still a young man. He could do things.
Young man, he's got lots of time to emulate Daddy.
Okay.
Can I just talk one more time about Cy Vance?
Go.
Now Vance is running for district attorney. He's got a lot of opponents. I'm pretty sure that even though Biden has said leave them alone at our level. At the New York State level, Tish James and certainly who really has done a good job, but in addition, Cy Vance has got a lot of political opponents. The one thing he's got going for him is Trump, if you think about it. And so the idea that he would give up on this is, I think, misplaced because it's really what people care about, and it's probably why he could get reelected.
Let's see. We have just a few minutes, so I want to get to as many of these letters as we can. While I have not yet heard about the DOJ's investigations regarding Trump pardons up for grabs, I did hear earlier that Barr made moves regarding the attorney who has been investigating Trump's allegations into the FBI's actions during the 2016 presidential election. The upshot is that Barr has made the attorney in question from a member of the DOJ to special counsel in order to make it harder for Biden to fire him. Perhaps Barr was hoping that this would assuage Trump and keep him from firing Barr. Just another quid pro quo.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's an excellent letter. An excellent letter.
I have a question about this. I need enlightenment again. Would it really be that hard for Biden to make that special prosecution go away? Dunham himself did not come up with any goods that Trump was able to use in time for this November election. It doesn't seem that It seems like another empty investigation, like looking for fraud in the electioneering. Barr came up empty-handed on that. Seems like this investigation on the start of the Russian investigation will also come up with not very much. There's been, what, one minor indictment of an FBI lawyer so far. So is it really that hard for Biden to make it go away?
Yeah, because the special counsel gives additional protections to the investigation. There's a couple of little twists that I think are going to end up in the courts. One is that, as I understood the special counsel law, it called for somebody outside of the Department of Justice, and Burke is a member of the Department of Justice, although Barr is arguing that there's internal rules that will allow it. Because of the special protections that the special counsel have, the new attorney general coming in can't just wipe it off the books. And this is why Barr did it right now. Now, there are ways you could starve it. I mean, you could go in and basically, you know, have him sit in a room with no desk and no phone and no help. So, I mean, there are all sorts of ways that you could minimize it. But at the same time, you just can't wipe it off completely.
Now, Bob, while you're educating us, I have a question for you. There used to be a very tough special prosecutor law. That law was allowed to lapse. And it was my understanding, and maybe I'm wrong, that this special prosecutor arrangement is very different from what we used to have. Is that correct?
That is my understanding of it, and I'm sure I will be corrected if I'm wrong in the statements. Is that I think changes in weakening of the special counsel came after the whole Clinton investigation with Starr.
But that was why Rod Rosenstein could have let Mueller go at any time, and we're all so worried about that when we thought Mueller was going to actually make a difference. And so why can't an assistant attorney general under Biden just say, okay, you're fired, goodbye, it's over?
Yeah, that was my point, exactly.
Mike writes to us and says the only difference between the Trump crime family and the Corleone crime family is that the Corleones are fictional. We got this from, there we go, Neil from Wendell, who says, so panel, when do you think Trump will start selling pardons out of a tent on the South Lawn? Step right up. Financial crime started $1 million. Murders, $2 million. A special today on rape discounted to $10,000. All right, that's Neil's take on this. Let's see. Paula writes, if a pardon is issued by the president, must the person being pardoned disclose what they were guilty of or what the pardon is for? Will there be a public record so people will know the truth?
Ho, ho. Me. Horseshack,
yes.
Horseshack. Me.
No. Ooh, yeah. Ooh, ooh.
The answer, yeah. The answer is no.
Well,
no, they don't have to
I mean,
do
they
any
just say they're
thing.
Pardoned. They don't Nixon say why they're being pardoned.
Nixon didn't do any such thing. Come on.
Yeah, except there is, you know, and again, I apologize for not bringing this up earlier. If you look at the Supreme Court decision of the Burdick versus the United States, the Supreme Court did say that a pardon carries, and this is a quote, carries an imputation of guilt, acceptance, a confession of it, which is, you know, if you remember when Arapio was pardoned, that people were pointing out that he admitted he was guilty by accepting the pardon, which is also the interesting because you can actually decide not to accept a pardon because you don't want to be viewed as being guilty. So I just wanted to toss that out there as we're learning as we go about pardons.
It's real
that's
time
why Julian, That's why Giuliani and the kids are banging on the door asking for pardons. They're not about to say, no, I don't want this because I'm not guilty of anything.
No, I don't.
That was actually the reason that Hillary Clinton tried to tramp down any kind of thought of her taking a pardon so that Trump wouldn't come after her. She didn't want to admit guilt. But I think it's just really a nicety. And, you know, the sheriff and the governor of Illinois have gone off and Milliken, all the guys who have gotten pardons from Trump have gone off and led very happy, carefree lives. Roger Stone is still causing trouble, even in political circles. And they're not acting guilty, or if they do, their guilt doesn't bother them that much.
All right, we have to take a break. We are desperately late. Let's go. We'll be back right after this. trying to make noises like that with my arm up against my lips in middle school and getting a detention.
You know, Joe, I'm actually having like really nice thoughts about the 70s Saturday morning cartoons and Tang commercials. So actually, Sarah, thank you.
Well, Mike Bowen, our engineer, just pointed out that he hopes by the end of this we all escape the video game that we're stuck in.
Ready Player 4?
Yes, right. Exactly. Wreck-It Ralph. All right. A couple letters and then we'll move on to other subjects here. Ed says, a link between donations and pardons. Does this surprise anyone? There's already a perfectly legal link between donations and our entire political system. It is called lobbying. Linda says, can a pardon be global or does it have to be for a particular crime? I think we addressed that.
Yeah.
Mark said, I think we addressed that one too. Maybe we're up to date. The reports indicate that Trump is mulling over pardons for his adult children. Suggest to me that Donald either knows or believes his kids were involved in some kind of illegal activity. The only difference. Okay. And we did that one too. Okay. Let us now move on to other stuff. We go to what we've been talking about, Bill Barr. So let's continue to talk about him. We mentioned this at the beginning of the program briefly, but not didn't talk about it specifically, and that is that Bill Barr says he has not seen fraud that could affect the election outcome. Quote, I have not seen fraud on a scale that could have affected a different outcome in the election, undercutting claims that President Trump and his allies have made without evidence of widespread and significant voting irregularities. We should note that those claims continue to this day. His comments to the Associated Press, while caveated, made Barr the highest-ranking Trump administration official to break with the president on his allegation that the election was stolen and they might offer political cover to other Republicans to stake out similar positions. Trump himself, though, has shown no signs of backing down, and some of his Capitol Hill allies were critical of Barr's assertions. Trump's relationship with his attorney general has already been deteriorating, with the president frustrated that Barr was unwilling to launch aggressive measures to support his fraud claims or take other steps that might benefit his reelection campaign. Alan.
Well, I mean, I think everybody's got something to say on this, but the idea that, you know, Barr now has to clean up his resume and get ready for the next phase in his life has occurred to me. What's interesting to me is that he hasn't been fired yet. You know,
right.
This is a firing.
Chris Krebs got fired for the same thing, right, Alan?
Yeah.
Isn't that what Chris Krebs said and wrote mm-hmm. again yesterday in the Washington Post? I'll say it again. This was a secure election.
Mm.
So my sense of it is that there's a reason that Barr hasn't been fired yet. Probably knows too much.
Hmm. Well, and the day's young, right?
Yes.
Day is young. You're, yeah. By the way,
that's
a profound statement. You are exactly right, Joe.
Bill Barr better bring his phone into the bathroom with him because he's going to watch Twitter to see if he's able to come out or not.
Just keep on checking.
I'm sorry for this, but he may be left on the barroom floor.
Yes.
That was a really low bar.
Oh, see? And here we go. We're off to the races.
Well, barring any other comments, I do think that this has... I do wonder, though, if he is actually, in his own way, trying to save Trump from the continued embarrassment from Giuliani and claims that he knows not going to stand up. And I know it's slightly different than what we've been talking about, but in a perverse way, it actually forces Trump and some of his supporters to look at what reality really is versus what the Giuliani reality is.
But every time somebody's tried to do that to him, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I think that's true. I, for one, as someone who's been arguing with crazy relatives about the election and how it wasn't in fact stolen, I'm very grateful to have William Barr say what he said yesterday. And it's interesting to me that he sat down for an interview with the Associated Press. I mean, this isn't something that, you know, was said in a hallway as he was, you know, on his way somewhere else and he got caught by a reporter. He sat down for this interview and he sat down with the Associated Press, which, if you know how kind of the news business works, the Associated Press goes into every newspaper in the country. You know, it's not, it's different than sitting down with the Washington Post or the New York Times. It's, you know, it's it, the news travels, gets out to every little nook and cranny very quickly if it's the Associated Press. And it's interesting to me that he did this, and I'm, you know, I'm very glad that he did. I think it's, I think, you know, there's just this tidal wave of misinformation out there, and to have anybody counter it, I think, is a very valuable thing.
All right, let's go.
So my theory is that his change of heart, starting back when he before the election, when he refused to rush the Russia hoax investigation, is that he is afraid himself of not impeachment, because he'll be out, but of a Department of Justice investigation into his behavior,
or lifelong derision.
Under a Biden expression.
Rosemary, or just lifelong derision, you know, from which you cannot be pardoned. In other words, people will always remember his role in defending Trump on some of the flimsiest of stupid things.
I think
like
the bus has left the station on that one.
Yeah, but again, you know, this isn't a bad strategy if you think about it. They've dug themselves, this campaign has dug themselves into such a hole that it's pretty much obvious to the majority of folks that there is no case. I mean, they've lost every single court case. I mean, it's been a farce having Giuliani, you know, in front of the Four Seasons landscaping and the hair dye incident. It's becoming an embarrassment. And now all of a sudden Barr coming out and saying this and saying it so publicly to everybody, that sort of takes some of the pressure off. I mean,
yeah, but
now they can
but
say,
yeah,
well, it came from the Department of Justice, so we're going to, you know, then I don't like it, but we're just going to move on.
Hey, he reminds me, $170 million. He doesn't need it to go on anymore.
Reminds me of the kids who fight, and one kid turns around and points to the other one and says, I didn't do it, he did. I mean, I think there's a certain amount of that.
JT writes to us, and I'm sorry, it's James writes to us and says, how did we go from the Russians stole the election in 2016 to, quote, the most secure election in 2020? There was no meaningful legislation
great
to protect
point.
One's rights to vote across the country. How can this be? It is a great point.
It is a great point, and I've thought about that.
Mm-hmm. I think
it's
a couple of things.
Point. Why? I don't understand the point.
I'm with you, Chris.
Well, the point meaning that we were saying, how did we go, considering it was never taken seriously, and if we say that there was Russian interference in 2016, we didn't take it seriously, and now this is the most secure election. How did we get there?
Well, we know.
You're talking about two different things.
Yeah.
You're talking about two different things. The Russians were accused of misinformation and, you know, phony Facebook advertising and hacking into people's emails, things like that, which all did happen. When Krebs said that this is the most secure election ever, he was talking about the voting system. And there's no evidence whatsoever, despite what a lot of people believe, that the Russians hacked into our voting system and changed tabulations. It's two different things.
If they did it,
what did you mean when you said it's a great point?
Bob?
I think that credit needs to go to Krebs and CISA, that they spent the last 4 years working with state and local election officials to ensure that there was backups. And I agree with the comments that he's been making, is that they have paper backups now that they didn't have. There was more coordination. So a lot of credit needs to go not just to DHS in this situation, but really to the state and local election officials who have worked really hard to change their systems. So a lot of work was done, and what's nice about it is a lot of the work may not be apparent to us because we just don't pay that much attention to it. But underneath, the systems were really strengthened because they recognized that it was a clear and present danger. and that the threats were different than they have been in the past.
Okay, that's really interesting and important, and I hear you loud and clear. I said it was a good point because it's not exactly true that the Russians were only involved in disinformation. There was known interference in the voting systems in several states in 2016, and it happened again now. So the thing I was most worried about when Trump brought it up was the Dominion machines. Our voting systems are hackable. We know that. And Congress has given no extra money in the past 4 years for voter security on voting machines or additional updated equipment, nor have we investigated further to find out exactly what kind of interference there was and where it came from. And so I think the point is important. We have a long way to go on election security. And I think even Chris Krebs and all the people we're going to give credit to under Bob's edict would agree with that.
Bob, do you agree with that?
I think you're absolutely correct. And I think we're going to have to be, always vigilant, because if we can't trust our voting systems, then we have no chance of surviving as a Republican democracy. This is bedrock.
Right.
I mean, this is also why I'm so upset. Why I'm so upset at the Trump administration for doing what he's doing, because it undermines the most bedrock foundational philosophy this country was based on.
Yeah, without question. You know, let's face it. We know that the Russians, fact one, the Russians aren't trying to help Joe Biden. The Russians were for Trump. So for Trump to be talking about it, or for allies or for others to be saying, this is a terrible thing because the Russians, were interfering, is nonsense, of course. We know who they were trying to help.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, even without taking Trump out of it, Alan, the Russians' ability to undermine our democracy, to show the rest of the world that it's vulnerable, that we aren't the shining star that we believe we are, this helps their foreign policy, and for short money that they've accomplished what they could never have accomplished with their international diplomacy and their military.
This is
core to the Russian philosophy.
Nevertheless, let's not forget who the Russians wanted in office. Okay, I mean, that's
it wasn't Hillary, right?
It wasn't Hillary, and it wasn't Joe.
Let's see. Seth wants to know if Trump can run. I think this is a serious letter. Can Trump run for president from jail?
I don't know. A mayor of Boston did. But I don't know if that's the same thing.
By the way, Seth goes on to say that even if he did, he'd win. All right. And then Denise says, according to Jerry Nadler, only non-governmental employees are eligible to be appointed as a special prosecutor. If that's correct, Dunham will be gone on day one of Biden's administration.
I just don't believe they're going to have a lot of trouble getting rid of him if they want to.
Yeah, and I think Biden is smart enough to know. Leave him alone, as Rosemary has suggested. Let him sit in a room with a yellow legal pad and a pencil.
The guy hasn't found anything. Right.
Yeah.
Let him go. Let him do it. Investigate.
All right. Let's see. We have about 8 minutes before we go to the bottom of the hour break. Let's start talking about the vaccine and the plan. The CDC advisory group says healthcare workers and nursing home residents should be the first to get coronavirus vaccines. The recommendations, if approved by the director, will become official CDC guidance to the states. The first doses of coronavirus vaccine should be given to an estimated 21 million healthcare workers, 3 million residents and staff of nursing homes, and other long-term care facilities, a federal advisory panel recommended yesterday afternoon. These groups were deemed the highest priority by the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices because the vaccine will initially be in extremely short supply after it is cleared by federal regulators. Healthcare personnel are a top priority because of their exposure to the virus and their critical role of keeping the nation's hospitals and clinics functioning. Residents and employees of long-term care facilities were prioritized because they account for nearly 40% of deaths from COVID-19, the disease caused by coronavirus. The recommendations for the highest priority groups, known as Phase 1A, will be sent to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director Robert Redfield, who also informs Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar. If the recommendations are approved, they will become official CDC recommendations on immunization in the United States and provide guidance to state officials who are scrambling to meet a Friday deadline for vaccine distribution planning. My big question from this story was, and it was one that I didn't find readily anyway, find an answer for, which does the amount of the initial doses that we think we have cover that set group?
Not nearly.
Yeah.
Everything I'm hearing is not nearly. And by the way, the Brits just did their thing with a committee that is made up of really distinguished people, independent people, and they came up with pretty much the same stuff. You know, the nursing homes come first, the older people, really older people, come first, the healthcare workers, boy bless them, they should be the very first, no question in my mind. And this is just classic politics: who gets what, when, and how.
Bob?
I don't believe there's enough at this minute, but as they ramp up production, you'll start to see that. Start to see the doses going there. I think it makes sense, right? I mean, you take care of the people who take care of you first, and then you go to the very most vulnerable group next. I would argue, though, that soon after, you know, we really do need to start to think about some other essential services. And I would include things like grocery stores and some of the logistics chains, and trying to prioritize teachers, because, you know, we're really seeing the impact on society of not having, particularly the K-12, not that I'm discounting the university and college system, but I like the idea of a set, you know, orderly rollout so that this doesn't just become a free-for-all. I thought it was good guidance. And, you know, you talk about what the UK does, Alan. The UK has a really interesting system where they actually empanel a group of scientists and experts to advise the prime minister on they call it a COBRA. So they make sure that they're bringing expert opinions into all of their policy decisions, and something that I have advocated for that we should be doing here as well.
So my other question is this for whatever vaccine gets approval first, or will it be based on the individual vaccine once it is approved?
I think it's agnostic to what the type of vaccine is. It's just that as they become available, these are the people that are going to get them first. So it's not saying that, you know, this, you know, type X is going to go to this group and type Y to another. It's just saying, you know, as they come off the conveyor belt, you know, we're going to take care of the first responder medical community, and then our nursing home and long-term care facilities.
So if go ahead, Rosemary.
Well, I was going to say it seems like it makes sense, and it's the way the system should work. And I think we all should be bracing for a rash of stories about to come out by good reporters on how people are jumping the system. I think that hospitals, certainly in the Boston area I know of, are already getting requests from people with money and healthcare coverage to say, reserve me a vaccine. And it's the same thing. Why did Ben Carson get drugs that were not available to other people? I think you're going to see people jumping ahead of line, especially when we get past the nursing homes and the healthcare providers. It would be nice if this could roll out as smoothly as it's pinpointed here, but I just don't see that happening in the way our healthcare system is set up.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're. I think you're spot on. I do think there's going to be that push, and in part, where we as a society in the past would have, you know, that those people would have been publicly shamed if it had come out, and you know, they would have been embarrassed and it would have had an impact on, you know, their lives and businesses. And right now, I'm so unsure about how, if people would just look at it and go, yeah, you know, good for them, or you know, the same comments about it's good to be, a, you know, you're a fool if you pay taxes, it's better to be a tax cheat. So you're right, there's going to be those pressures. But also at some point in time, the supply line is really going to be turning out enough where, you know, it will catch up with, it'll catch up with demand.
You know, using Rosemary's plan here of having the panel kind of help us work through things in our brain. You know, we're seeing record numbers. We're seeing record numbers in the Capital District. We're seeing record numbers across the country. Yesterday, I believe, was the second highest day of death due to this virus since April, and we're quickly approaching where we can probably overtake that number, unfortunately. And then I get a weird press release about, I don't know, a half hour ago, that saying that they're opening up a movie theater in Schenectady. Well, what? I mean, how? This is what I don't understand. How does that work? I mean, this is nothing against the movie theater. I don't get it of how they can do that, and yet we're only supposed to have 9 people or 10 people at our Thanksgiving dinner. And oh, by the way, bars and restaurants and schools are closed, as they should be probably. I just don't get this.
Well, they may be planning for the future. I mean, that's a possibility, right? The assumption is the vaccine.
Well, everyone else is closed and they're opening. And I don't get how do they get the approval to do that, because they're going to open on Friday, mm-hmm. at the height of the pandemic. Bob, does that make any sense to you?
I mean, it's a horrible time for the business to be opening. I mean, the only way I could think it could happen is if they have protocols to clean and they can isolate, you know, socially distance. I mean, it's not a great business model, but no, you're right. It does not make sense to me. I could also say on a personal note, I wouldn't go to the movies right now. I mean, I
don't want to go out of my house.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be a Debbie Downer. You know, I'm looking at the numbers, I'm looking at the trends, I'm looking at hospitalization right now, and I'm really worried about the next 3 to 5 weeks. And
you bet.
And I think we're going to see an enormous spike, and I think we're going to see another spike again in the end of January, beginning of February, because of the
Christmas.
The holidays.
We have to take a break. We'll be right back. I think this is the love theme from the Computers Will Get Us movie.
I have to give you some intelligence from a musician friend who has messaged me saying that the synthesizer is analog rather than digital, which gives it that distinctive Saturday cartoon-like kind of sound. That's when they used it. It's pretty cool, huh?
Very cool. See, yeah. We're learning so much today.
Yeah.
Before we went to break, Chris, I believe the last, while we were talking about the movie theaters and such, you were starting to say something and I had to cut you off. Do you remember what it was, and would you like to make your point?
Well, you were just talking about some of the contradictions and how, you know, what we're allowed to do and what we're not supposed to do. And, you know, I agree that sometimes it just doesn't seem to make much sense. I mean, the movie theaters, you know, New York is one of the final states to open movie theaters, and they argue that they can operate as safely as restaurants can.
But then most of them closed.
But, yeah.
Right?
Well, I think they reopened. Many of them reopened, but I mean, I think they're allowed to reopen. I don't think that will be the case for much longer. And I don't even know how relevant it is, because, as you know, other people said, it's not clear that anyone's actually going to show up.
Right.
But I don't think I would go to the movies, you know, I mean, as much as I might like to.
It's
not when there's Netflix.
Yeah.
All right. Let's in our final moments here, let's go to the state of Georgia, where a Georgia election official says it has to stop. Gabriel Sterling, a voting system official in Georgia, harshly criticized the president for failing to condemn threats of violence against people overseeing the election in the state. in one of the most striking rebukes to President Trump since he launched his baseless attacks on the American electoral process. The Georgia election official lashed out at the president on Tuesday for failing to condemn the threats. Gabriel Sterling, a Republican and Georgia's voting system implementation manager, said at an afternoon news conference at the state capitol, his voice shaking with emotion, "Mr. President, you have not condemned these actions or this language." He added, "This is elections. This is the backbone of democracy, and all you have and you have not done a damn word." Try it again. And all of you who have not said a damn word are complicit in this. It's just too much. Mr. Sterling's outburst of anger and frustration came amid a sustained assault on Georgia's election process by Mr. Trump as he seeks to reverse his loss to his Democratic rival, former Vice President Joe Biden. Alan?
Hero.
Yeah.
It's that simple. The guy's a hero. When history, when the books are written and the rest are said, there are going to be some Republicans who have had a head full and just are saying, no, that's enough. Now you're going to kill people, because I have no question. I don't know about you, Chris, but I know that there's some really nutty people out there. I get some of their letters, and you say to yourself, okay, if they're crazy enough to write in a letter that you should be dead. Are they also crazy enough to pull because of their mind and the way that it works, to pull the trigger? The answer is yes. And so what the guy said was exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, what he said was right on. And, and it goes back to what we were talking about before with William Barr and why what he said yesterday was important. I mean, it's important to dispel these conspiracies. Because what people are being accused of really is pretty close to treason. I mean, if you believe what Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani laid out in that press conference a few weeks ago, you're talking about a country that isn't what people think it is. You are talking about treason. And there's no evidence for any of it, and it is awfully dangerous. I don't know about the threat of violence, but I do know that there's a real threat to the legitimacy of the democracy if 20% of the public believe that elections are just fraudulent and meaningless.
Right.
I know Republican voters, and this may thrill some Democrats, I know Republican voters who say they're not going to vote anymore because there's no point, and it's just it's disheartening. So what he said yesterday was good.
So what does that mean? No, Rosemary just saying good. But so what does that?
I said good, and it's because I don't think that even the act of heroes like this saying the truth. Yes, and even I guess Bill Barr is in there because he did speak the truth this time. It's not dispelling anything. Lloyd Dobbs has pronounced him now part of the dark state. You will not convince Trump supporters of anything. So if they stop voting, that's great news for democracy.
Well, the other thing, don't forget, Chris.
No, it's not, Rosemary. That's not true at all. It's not good for democracy if a large part of the population believes the system is rigged. I mean, it just isn't. You may not like the way that they vote, but it's the more people lose faith on both sides, and it's not just, we saw similar things in 2016 with some Democrats. Believing that everything was rigged and, that the election system was fraudulent. But it's not good. I mean, over the long term, when people lose faith in their democracy, there are real serious ramifications for that. And I find the whole thing discouraging. And I find it so incredibly irresponsible what
Trump especially is doing. Chris,
go ahead.
Think about what happened in Michigan, right? I mean, that's a prime example of the militia getting spun up by these words, and we're actually in the process of implementing a kidnapping of two governors. My question, and while I support everything that was said in Georgia, where is everybody else? Where is McConnell? I'm sorry. Where is Lindsey Graham? Come on, folks. I mean, we're beyond the idea that this of just the election. This is the country. Yep.
But these are the questions we've been asking for a long time, and it doesn't seem the needle doesn't move on it, right, Alan?
But if I was on the Supreme Court right now, I would say I want to associate myself with Chris's comments because I think he's right. He's right at what he's saying. You're undermining the entire system. And this obvious answer is a peaceful transference of power, which we have in this country, democracy. We want everybody to vote. We want everybody to vote. We want them to get in there. I could say more, but I'm not.
You know, well, it's just fairly insidious because, and I wish I don't have it right in front of me. I could have come up with it yesterday. Today I can't for whatever reason. But there was a senator on one of the Sunday news shows, a Republican senator, and said that he believed that there should be a peaceful transfer of power, and he said, you know, and assuming that it happens that Joe Biden is the winner, then he will take over. Well, I mean, come on. Yeah. I mean, that was Sunday, for goodness sakes. Like, that isn't, we've been talking about profiles and courage. I mean, you know, that's just a silly thing to say of why you can't make the next step and say, right, okay, even what Bill Barr is doing and say, all right, there's no evidence and Joe Biden is going to be the next president of the United States. We know this.
Well, Elise Stefanik said essentially the same thing yesterday. She was asked point blank, did Donald Trump win the election? And she wouldn't answer, or, you know, who won the election? And she wouldn't answer the question.
Right.
Which is why I despair of bringing around and getting everybody to vote and be happy again. You all sound like Joe Biden. It's not going to happen. And so if the alternative is that they drop out of the system, I still think that's for the best rather than having them stay in and poison it the way they are now.
But
how do you reach
you
them?
See, but fundamentally, I'm on Chris's side where you know, I think it should be we should make it easier to vote, not harder. And our voting numbers aren't anywhere near, I think, that they should be. Honestly,
how did I get opposite to that? How did I get on the opposite side of that? I think that's absolutely true.
Because you said it was okay to disenfranchise anyone from voting.
No, I didn't. I said if they choose not to be part of the system because they don't believe in it and I don't think there's a way to convince them they should be, then fine. Goodbye.
Yeah, Bob.
I'm to quote the Mandalorian, I have spoken. I hear you. I am. I'm just struggling with it.
I didn't see that movie.
Oh, it's a great series on Disney Plus.
Yeah,
it's a Star Wars story.
I'll have to watch.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I will. I know.
Not that we promote any single show or not. I understand what you're saying, but I think that disenfranchisement leads to a real rot in the country. And that's what I worry about. I mean, I think you're spot on. And I think there are things that we could do as a society that would make it easier. Why don't we have elections on Saturday rather than on a Tuesday? Why don't we think about really think about how to make it easier for people to give their opinion. So,
because Republicans, those people you're so worried about, don't want people voting. They don't want more people voting. That's why we don't have it on Saturday. That's why we.
Well, that's true, and that's why it's amazing that we have voting by mail, because they knew what was going to happen as a result of this. The more you expand the franchise, the more Democrats are going to be present. There's no question.
That's not true, though, Alan. There's not evidence to suggest that's true.
Oh really? Oh really? As Mario used to say. Oh really? I'm telling you right now. Just take a look at what happened in Georgia and all the other states, and you'll know exactly what I was talking about.
But Republicans did really well on Election Day. That's one of the things that's so remarkable about what's happening is that Republicans actually have a success story to talk about. You know, Elise Stefanik could have been on the air yesterday talking about all the Republican women she got elected and how well Republicans did in all these states. Instead, we're focusing on this temper tantrum from the guy at the top. But, you know, there was actually evidence of a pretty good little, maybe not a red wave, but at least – a pretty good swing toward Republicans in many parts of the country.
In and Republican parts of the country, that's right.
Really, 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 no.
Yes.
No, it happened in a lot of different places, and it happened despite really high turnout.
Well, look, if you're talking about Georgia and lower offices, you're right, because it's a Republican state. Come on. But if you're talking about New York, where you just got yourself a, because I believe of early voting, you got yourself a state Senate with a veto-proof majority, that was quite something. And again, I would attribute that to early voting.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that. I mean, a lot of those places have been, you know, New York has been swinging in that direction for a long time now. I don't know how much early voting had to do with it. I mean, turnout was high everywhere, and that's a great thing, and we should be celebrating that. But there isn't a lot of evidence that high turnout hurt Republicans. Republicans did, by and large, pretty well on Election Day.
But not in New York.
Actually,
as the kids say now, actually the word of the century, the word of the 20s. Actually, if you take a look at what happened on the same thing in New York, people turned out the Hinchey race, the Senate race, and then in come the mail-in ballots, and she wins from way behind. Come on.
All right.
Yeah, but
I'm just appreciating Alan using slang. Okay. That's it was very woke, Alan. Thank you.
It's very what?
Woke. Yeah.
You mean I woke up?
Do you have a 10-second right of reply, Chris?
I just want to say this has been a very frustrating appearance on the show today because I've been sitting here in my car watching my dog dig up my gardens for the last 20 minutes and driving me nuts.
Well, I've been having that trouble with my puppy of just digging and digging and digging. So I feel your pain. I will.
It's like I'm powerless. When I'm on the radio, I'm powerless to stop it. I can't scream at her. I'm just sitting here watching it happen. And
Joe, bring your puppy to Chris's house. His garden's already screwed. So,
what's wrong with you people? Dogs have rights.
Of course. You're absolutely right. All right. We're out of time. My thanks to everybody. Chris, good luck with the pup. And Alan, thank you,
thanks.
Of course. Rosemary and Bob, thank you. We'll be back.
Thank you.